With over three decades of experience within global business, and the majority of which was spent in people and team development, our special guest today, Liz Clayton-Jones, has had the privilege of gaining deep insights into the workings of complex organizations and the people who lead and serve them. I'm excited to have Liz on our show because she is a certified Gallup Strengths and Myers-Briggs coach, and she's a recognized expert in employee engagement and has spent over the last 15 years as a trainer, facilitator, mentor, and coach. And you're going to love this delightful conversation that we had. Liz is from the UK, and I love her accent and her very soothing, calm demeanor. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did as we wrap up our series on how Clifton Strengths compares to other assessments out there. Welcome to the Navigating Your Leadership podcast, where we are changing the wave of the future. Like it or not, the world has changed, and as an exceptional leader, you have to change with it or risk being left behind. Hi, I'm your host, Sherry Miter. I'm here to help you navigate this new leadership style. Inside the podcast, you'll discover what your team really wants and needs from you, how to tap into your God-given talents, how to increase your productivity with a strengths-based team, and how to realign with your North Star to truly enjoy your work and your life. This podcast will inspire and empower you today so you can elevate your influence into the future. If you're ready to step out of your comfort zone, then untie those dock lines and jump on board as we begin navigating your leadership. Welcome back to the Navigating Your Leadership podcast. This is your host, Sherry Miter, and I am excited to have our guest on today, Liz Clayton-Jones. And Liz, thank you so much for being willing to get on the show today. I know it has been something we've been trying to do for So finally, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Sherry. It's absolutely wonderful to be here and a privilege to be invited.
So, well, and obviously Liz is not from the United States, as you can tell from her beautiful accent. So if you want to just kind of share a little bit, Liz, of, you know, where you're from, first of all, and what you do and how you got there. What's your
story? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this time of life, could be quite a long story, but I'll keep it really succinct. So you're right, I'm not in the US, I'm in the UK. I'm in a little village not far outside Oxford, for those of you who've heard of Oxford University. I didn't go to Oxford University, I just happened to live quite near there. My background is, I guess, half science and half people. So I did a degree in English literature many years ago. I then, for some bizarre reason, ended up in a science career with an international FMCG and then moved into a communications role, which then took me into a people role. And for the last 15 years of my corporate career that lasted 35, I was very much a specialist in employee engagement and building high-performing teams. And it's during that 15 years that I became an advanced Myers-Briggs coach. So we're talking a little bit about the MBTI or the Myers-Briggs type indicator today, and also a certified Gallup Strengths coach. And most of my latter career was spent looking enterprise-wide at employee engagement, strengths-based team development, and really building strong team culture that led into a strong corporate culture with strong values. I left corporate life 2 years ago, set up my own company, Beehive Performance Limited, and my aim through that is to provide profound service to organizations and teams in all of those wonderful areas. So employee engagement, high performance teams, and strengths-based development. And I'm particularly passionate about encouraging collaboration through diversity of thought, which is why these tools play beautifully into what I do.
And I love your background. I just think I love the perspective that you were able to bring, not only your own work experience, but the science background, the people background, the corporate, you know, that you bring all these things together and you've been able to create this
great business that I'm sure is a blessing for people in normal life, but now post-COVID, or still COVID, really.
Well, it is still COVID, yeah.
It's still COVID.
Yeah, especially here in Europe at the moment, we're just heading into fourth wave, which isn't great fun.
Yeah. And that's something, like, how has your business, before we get into our main topic, how has your business evolved during COVID? Like, what are you seeing with corporations? What do they need more than ever now?
Yeah, do you know what? It's just time to talk together, I think, Sherry, because when you're on site, you can argue that there's lots of things that we've managed to successfully move remotely. You know, we've got enough technology now to mean that we can connect like you and I are doing now, you know, across many thousands of miles without any delay in the recording. Not like, you know, when I was a child and I used to speak to my relatives in Australia and you'd have to wait 2 minutes for them to hear what you said so that they could respond back. You know, there's so much we can do with technology, but we lose a sense of connectivity. The casual connectivity. People have talked about losing the water cooler moments or the coffee machine moments, those conversations where you suddenly find you have some synergy with somebody who's in a totally different department or working on a different project. And you go, oh, hang on, we could do something here together. And it was a completely casual conversation that wouldn't have happened through a manufactured, you know, set meeting with a meeting link and a time in a diary. So I think we've lost some of that, and perhaps losing some of this sense of team when it comes to real pastoral care. So I know that some of the teams that I talk to, I work predominantly with science and technology teams. That's you know, they're my people, that's my background. You know, they are perhaps not hardwired for reaching out all of the time. It's not a stereotype. There is a larger proportion of what we might call introverted personality styles than extroverted. And therefore, it's very easy just to work in your home office and not reach out and make the connections. It's starting to have an impact on how people really view the value of collaboration and connection. And it's going to be a hard habit to reintroduce, I think.
Yeah, such great insights, and totally, and we could totally change the course of our podcast episode in that direction.
I'm sure that we can tie it all in beautifully, Sherry.
Yes. Perhaps we'll do that in the future, have that other conversation. But our topic today is, and you actually kind of segued into that a little bit with the introvert versus extrovert, but talking about, you're the last in our series on how Clifton Strengths compares, differs, complements other assessments out there. And we're going to be talking about the Myers-Briggs today. So maybe even start there with what does Myers-Briggs, for those that aren't familiar with that assessment, they hear me talk a lot about Clifton Strengths.
Yeah.
But for anybody that's not familiar with that assessment, there may be somebody out there. I know it's a very popular one. Can you give like a quick synopsis of what that assessment is?
Yeah, sure. So the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, or MBTI as it's known, is based in Jungian psychology, as are a lot of psychometric tools, in fact, not Clifton Strengths, but lots of other ones. So some of the people listening in might be familiar with DISC or Insights. There's another one called Luminous Sparks, and I'm sure there are many others that broadly have their root in the Jungian psychology and the personality dichotomies that he was working on back in the 1930s. And Isabel Myers and Catherine Briggs were a mother and daughter team, and they were students of Carl Jung and were in a family where psychology was often the topic of conversation, again, in the 1930s and 40s. And they saw some potential in his theory, and also found that when they introduced a new member to their family, which happened to be Isabel Myers' husband, that it changed all the dynamics in the family. And it got them really curious as to whether the Jungian psychology could be applied rather than just talked about. So they went on to develop the Myers-Briggs type indicator. It was tested all the way through in the late 40s. It was used to see how likely it was that people returning from the Second World War would adapt to civilian life, so prisoners of war, so largely military in its application. And again, through the 60s in a similar environment. And then as the family grew bigger, the grandson then picked the tool up in the 80s and it became a corporate tool or a commercial tool. There are lots of pretenders out there, some good and some really not quite so good, that claim to be the Myers-Briggs type indicator, and they use the same four-letter outcome. But essentially, there is one Myers-Briggs company, and they own all of the research and the copyright to the original Myers-Briggs tool. It's available in lots of different languages. They've got lots of research that enable us to make comparisons with different cultures, etc. And a bit like Clifton Strengths, it's a licensed tool. I know anyone can go on and do Clifton Strengths. There are free Myers-Briggs type indicators out there, but the actual Myers-Briggs type indicator with the trademark attached, you have to be a licensed holder to practice that. So that's a little bit of the background. What it does is, and this is where it starts to differ quite considerably from Clifton Strengths, is it takes the Jungian psychology, it builds on it, and it provides a framework. So in this instance, it looks at four dichotomies of aspect of personality. So not the whole of you, but these four core elements. It looks at where you draw your energy from, how you gather and trust information, how you make decisions, you know, what your motivations are towards making decisions, and then your core lifestyle approach. And it takes these four elements, assigns you a letter to different poles of those dichotomies, and you end up with a 16-box grid. Sometimes people see that as putting you in a box. Actually, what the power of Myers-Briggs is, humankind is messy. We know when we talk about Clifton Strengths, everyone has a unique Clifton Strengths profile. You know, when you look at that wonderful list of 34 talent themes, you're not likely to find anyone with all 34 in the same order as you, whereas you are likely to end up in the same box, in inverted commas, as someone who's taken Myers-Briggs, because there's only 16 think places you can go. It isn't a box so much as a framework. So if you can imagine every unique human being out there, we kind of need a shortcut, especially when we're working in fast-paced business, to see our way through the messiness of humankind and say, okay, so we know we're all unique. That's not up for argument. However, there are certain traits that we might hold in common, and these are likely to be the traits that stand out most. So let's put a framework over that so we can kind of simplify it. So you might end up with the same four-letter type as someone else. It doesn't mean you're the same. You're still unique. You could divide each of those four, 16 boxes into more and more and more boxes. But people looking from the outside of that type at the two of you might see that you react similarly to challenges, to tasks, to relationships, etc.
Wow. I love all of that history. I didn't know about, I knew it was a mother-daughter that originated, but I did not know about the whole, where the military coming back, which made me think our conversation earlier about with COVID. It's interesting. I wonder how now with kind of, again, with all the stuff happening with COVID, the place that it's going to take.
Yes, that could be really interesting. Yeah, a really interesting thought. In fact, I hadn't made that connection either until this conversation. So great. Yeah.
I'm high strategic, so my mind always goes to those kind of little effects that I see in futurists.
Number 18 for me, so I'll let you have that one.
Yeah. I always look, and so before we hit the record button, and I know it was like not the formal, I did take the formal test. I remember going to a leadership workshop. It was fabulous through our local chamber, and it was a great event. And part of the, it was a whole year long training, but they kicked it off with a retreat, an overnight retreat. And part of the thing is they did have Myers-Briggs team come in and do a whole training with us. We spent, was it the whole day or a half? It was pretty intense. And we had to take the assessment ahead of time, but I don't remember what my four letters. So I looked quickly on a grid before we hopped on, and I'm pretty sure this was right, that it was an INTP. But I remember one of the exercises we did, and it had to do, and maybe you can decipher what, because I don't remember which of the letters it would have had to fit into, but it was, they had us stand on basically a human timeline.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were to go, at which point, if we had to complete an assignment, would we be absolutely the last minute, or would we have it completed well ahead of time? And we stood on like where the time frame would be, and then had a whole conversation around it. And it was so insightful because it really made people, like, they asked, well, how do these people that would finish well ahead of time feel about the people that wait to the last minute?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we feel about that? And it was, yeah.
Yeah. So that dichotomy would have been your approach to lifestyle. So the two, the poles on that dichotomy are what's called judging and perceiving. The judging element, so that's your P. The judging element is not to be confused with judging as in a court judge. It's not about being judgmental. It's about being measured, planful, scheduled, early starting. So they'll be the extreme judging preference people will be the guys that have been one end of the scale, if you like. You know, the sooner I can get things done, the more I've got time for something else. Actually, if I have a task to do, I want to start early, so I've got time for it to go wrong. So they're the ones that always plan for contingency. And then the opposite end of the scale would be your perceiving scale. And these guys have a preference for being more emergent, more spontaneous, pressure prompted is what we call them. So, you know, they might be the sort of people that do their very best work the night before their deadline, you know, where they get, you know, a real buzz. Somebody with judging can do their work the night before the deadline. It's just they're not going to enjoy it. They're going to feel really stressed because they didn't really want to leave it that late. Whereas the winging it last minute adrenaline rush gives the guys with the P preference a bit more of a kick. And of course, it's a spectrum. So you can be kind of anywhere on that line, from extreme scheduled, planful, structured people who want to be really early starting to the people that, you know, really don't want any kind of schedule at all and want to be, you know, to live their lives in a totally spontaneous way.
Yeah. And like I said, that whole exercise really, and that totally makes sense and you sharing the rest of it now. But I just remember that made such an impact because of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had all around it and came to that understanding that ultimately it didn't matter if we were way on this spectrum or that spectrum, as long as the assignment was done.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you make a really good point about it being the conversation, because that's the same with any of these tools. It's not the tool itself that makes the difference, although it's useful to be self-aware and read a piece of paper that maybe affirms or confirms some suspicions you had about yourself or explains some behavior or feeling that you have. But if you don't use it in practice and have a conversation about how it will work and how your style impacts someone else, or their style might impact you because yours is different, then it loses some of its value. And the it's interesting when you look at that, just that JP dichotomy in teams, this is often where the biggest sense of distrust comes from. Because you can imagine, and I'm sure you can find some strengths that have similar tensions, but you can imagine starting a project. You know, I quite often use science projects as an example because they can shift really quickly. And you can imagine that two people assigned different elements of the same project, and they've got to converge in 3 months' time. So the person with a judging preference, early starting, likes to have a plan and a schedule. We'll look at that 3 months and go, right, I've planned all my milestones. I need to build in a bit of contingency at the end. So, you know, I've got plenty of time for something to go wrong because I'm absolutely going to hit that 3 month deadline. And actually, I'll start now because then I can get going. Whereas the person with the perceiving preference might look at that 3 months and go, oh, that's ages. I don't have to even worry about it yet. And they might be sort of thinking about it in their head while they drive home or they walk the dog or something like that. But it's not really, they're not really galvanized to do anything yet. So a month into the project, the person with the judging preference is cracking on and they're looking across at this person with the perceiving preference going, they're not doing any work. Oh no, we're going to miss the deadline. And the P is looking across at the J going, geez, man, chill out. And as the deadline nears, the person with judging preference is getting more and more anxious. And that's when the P starts to come into their own. Then a decision is taken that the project is no longer relevant. The world is moving quickly. We don't need it anymore. Now, the judging person, because they've built that plan and they've started the work, they're feeling when they hit that sudden switch, oh, we don't need to meet that deadline anymore at all because we're not even doing the project. They just think, oh, I've completely wasted 2 months of really good work. Whereas the perceiving person, because of this emergent nature, they go, oh, that's cool. I hadn't really started anything anyway. And this new thing looks really shiny and interesting. So P's love change. They sort of bob along with the current and go where it takes them with quite a chilled approach to that. But it can build quite a lot of distrust in the workplace.
Right. And I could see too that in that same scenario, even if it didn't get changed using your science project, but there was probably a lot of anxiety built if you don't trust
team. Yeah.
If you trust them and you've worked with them before, you know that they're a last minute person, but they always come through.
That's right. And that's where the conversations can start to be beneficial because you can say, okay, so if we can do an assessment like this that shows that we have likelihoods of having a mixture of these traits in our teams, we just need to have, you know, reach a compromise. You know, what is the best way for us to think about our approaches in that way? Is it, as a P, I agree that I will tell you if there's going to be a risk to the deadline. Trust me that I will tell you if it looks like I'm not going to meet it, but allow me to work at my own pace and, you know, get off my case a bit with the updates, but giving the J what they need in terms of security and reassurance.
Right. And as you keep saying, Liz, it really is the communication. It's the conversations about it. So what else could you say about the Myers-Briggs and how it is, maybe how it complements strengths or how it totally differs?
Yeah, I think they measure two totally different things and their methodologies are different as well. And what I will say is you're likely to find some overlap because we're one person. So it doesn't matter how many of these assessments you do, whether it's Myers-Briggs or whether it's DISC or whether it's something, I think there's VIA character strength. There's so many assessments out there. You could be assessed to death, but you would find overlaps because fundamentally you're one person. But Myers-Briggs and Clifton strengths do fundamentally measure different things. Myers-Briggs is about personality preference. It's not you can't define success through Myers-Briggs. You might find some areas in life that you're more comfortable, but it's not a predicator of success in a particular role or in a particular talent even. It is a preference. So, you know, I'll give you an indicator. So my natural preference on the energy where I draw energy from is in the area of introversion. So typically characteristics of introversion are quiet, reflective, contained, not really want to share much. And a lot of that is because they draw their energy from inside themselves and therefore anything they give out drains their batteries, if you like, and therefore they're hardwired to keep things in because that keeps them fired up to do what they do best. Now, I'm fundamentally a trainer. I do keynote speeches, etc. It doesn't mean I can't do those things. It just means I have to draw my energy back at some point to recover from them. So if I sat entirely in preference, we wouldn't be having a chat now, partly because most of my last 15 years of my career wouldn't have existed in the way it exists now. I've learned how to network, how to be with large groups of people, how to connect, to do the things that I need to do what I, to get out the messages that I love and help teams in the way that I want to. But it's meant that I've had to work a lot of the time out of preference. It hasn't meant that I've been bad at those things. I just have to care for myself a little bit at the end of these activities so that I can recharge my batteries. So that's what I mean by a preference. It's like, well, I prefer to be over here. Doesn't mean I can't be over here. And I might not always think that that's the most natural place to go, but it doesn't mean I can't do it. So you can't use Myers-Briggs for recruitment, for, I mean, you shouldn't really use strengths for that either, but you know, it's not a predictor of success. It just helps you understand your style, if you like. And what it's doing is it's a so if you go through the formal Myers-Briggs assessment rather than one of the free ones, so you go to the Myers-Briggs company, the assessment that you get is very thorough. But even with all of that research, because it's a self-assessment and they're looking at fitting people into a grid, if you like, fitting people into a model, around 24% of people won't assess correctly by doing the report. And that's one of the things all these free ones don't tell you, is the fact that it's only as accurate as your filters are. And if you're not conscious of your filters, then the outcome might be wrong. You know, if you think that introversion and extroversion, for instance, all about whether you like people, which is a massive oversimplification, you might try and feed all the answers to say, I want everyone to think I love people, when actually it's not really what your preference is. So it needs a coach to work through it with you. And there's a second stage of the assessment, which is then verifying the reported results to make sure that you end up with the four letters that suit you best. And say 24% of people don't get that first time through the report. Strengths, on the other hand, is very much more definitive. It was built from a model that looked at success and then worked backwards to see where the traits and behaviors came from, rather than being a theory that we're trying to put people into, if you like. And all of the research that Gallup have done over the years have made that particular assessment pretty definitive, which is why the test-retest correlation is so high. And what that is measuring, you well know, is your innate talent, your predisposed ability to be great at something. So it's not measuring your strengths, it's telling you where your innate talent is so you can grow it into a strength. So the way I like to think of the two together is Gallup is what you, or StrengthsFinder or Clifton Strengths is what you will do. You know, if you have analytical as a talent, you will be analytical. You don't have to be a scientist to do that. You might just be analyzing your household budget or your relationships, but you'll have an analytical thinking approach to things. Myers-Briggs shows you how you might show up doing that. So an extroverted analytical might use the analytical nature of themselves to drive action, to share that analysis with lots of different people, to, you know, put it out in the world so that it creates some traction and difference and puts some outward facing energy to it. Whereas somebody with an introversion preference, an introverted analytical, might just use this for internal reflection. They might use it to inform decisions, but you might never see the analytical at work. Or they might use it to share in a much more contained environment, maybe writing white papers or sharing a document or writing letters to people. So the way your analytical then is will show up differently according to your personality preference, which is where your Myers-Briggs type comes in. Does that help?
That does. And I loved your explanation there. That was so clear, very clear, like the best I've heard of all of that. So unfortunately, as always, the time flies for these interviews. So we are coming to the end of our conversation. But is there anything else that you would want to add on how anything about Myers-Briggs or CliftonStrengths that you feel like the audience should know?
So I think the one thing I would just share is there's an immense power in using both. I would always say that if you're working with a client and they already have an in-house tool and you're desperate to get CliftonStrengths in there, because we just know as converts of the CliftonStrengths tool that it's so powerful to know what your innate talent is, then go with what they're using as well, because a lot of these tools do complement each other because they're measuring different things. They're just helping you see the whole of you in a different light. And often it's about giving you language to explain yourself, either to yourself or to other people. So if you think about the 34 talent themes of CliftonStrengths and then the elements of the Myers-Briggs tool, it's just language. It's language to help you explain your traits and behaviors and understand those of others, and bringing them both together. You know, this is what I will do, and this is how I might do it. Just creates a fantastic tool for a team or a family to just understand each other better, so that you can, you know, work your way through some of the challenges that you might have, the conflicts, the disagreements, the different approaches, and go, all right, well, that's why such and such does that. Okay, I can chill a little because they're not doing it on purpose. It's how they're wired. Maybe we can now have a conversation so they understand how it's impacting me and we can find a way through it.
I love that. And isn't that what we all just need? Better conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And I always like to ask the guests on the show, is there a book that you can recommend? And also, do you have a quote that you would like to close the show with?
Yeah. So I'm a fairly eclectic reader, and I'm really not sure I have a favorite book. But as we're on the topic of Myers-Briggs, I would direct people towards a book called Gifts Differing by Isabel Myers. It's been published a long while, but it really gives the research and the idea behind the Myers-Briggs type indicator, and was probably one of the first books, but certainly quite an early book that was really trying to embrace diversity, but from this point of view of diversity of thought. And actually, I just love the title because it kind of sums up what we do with CliftonStrengths as well, as we all have different gifts. So mm-hmm. Gifts Differing by Isabel Myers. And in terms of a quote, if anyone visits my website, you'll see this loud and proud on the front because I just love it. And it's a quote from Zig Ziglar. And he says, "You don't build a business, you build people, because it's people that build your business."
I love that. I love that. I love Zig Ziglar, and I love that quote. That's beautiful. And speaking of your website, what is your website if people would like to connect with you or see a little bit more about what you offer, Liz?
Oh, that's very kind, Sherry. So I'm at www.beehiveperformance.com. So it's Beehive Performance, all one word. You'll find that there's a number of services that are outlined on that site in a contact form if they'd like to reach out to me.
All right, great. Well, thank you again for being on the podcast, Liz. I enjoyed our conversation, and we may have to do this again because I still had so many other thoughts or questions I would love to go.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Sherry. It's been a pleasure.
My hope and prayer is that today's episode left you feeling inspired and empowered with some tangible steps to implement today. But honestly, the podcast is just the beginning. Through my coaching, my clients learn how to lean into their strengths to create their unique style of leadership, along with gaining strategies to create dynamic and productive teams. Teams with a mutual passion and respect for each other. Whether you just need a few small course corrections or you feel like you need an entirely new ship to lead, I do love a challenge. I'd love to invite you to send me a DM, or better yet, let's hop on a call and see how we can continue this leadership journey together. The link to book a call is in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.